And the thing about him is he was relentlessly trying to find answers to problems. You know what I mean? He wasn't the kind of person that did a lot of pontificating. You know, he was really, you know, a focused individual and trying to actually come up with things that would make a difference for people.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. In for Vince Petrano, here's Eric Bilstad.
Eric in for Vince. Vince has taken a couple of days off. Michelle Richards is here as well. Debbie Lasga's got the roads. Adam Roberts in our newsroom. And, of course, Greg Pancake Hill doing everything else. Much more on the legacy of Michael Lovell, the Marquette University president who passed away over the weekend. We'll do that at 7:20. But first, right now, prosecution in President Biden's son Hunter's federal trial could soon wrap up its case. And the big question now is, will Hunter take the stand?
We'll find out if Hunter Biden takes the stand in his own defense. His defense attorney raised that prospect before the jury went home for the weekend. Biden has pleaded not guilty to three federal charges, including unlawful possession of a gun while using or addicted to drugs and making false statements to buy that gun.
That's CBS correspondent Scott McFarland. So the jury could get the case as soon as today. We'll find out if Hunter Biden does, in fact, take the stand. He is accused of lying on paperwork for a gun purchase back in 2018. He said he wasn't using drugs at the time. The prosecution is alleging that he was, in fact, using drugs when he purchased that gun. That's not the only court case taking place today. There's at least another hearing to keep an eye on. Former President Donald Trump is scheduled to be interviewed by New York probation officials today. So this is normal. This is a required step before his July sentencing in the criminal hush money case. So this will take place today. Now, he's not going to actually be in New York, though. He's going to do it via Zoom. So he'll do that interview via computer video conference from his residence at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach. People telling the AP that they were not authorized to explain anymore as to why he wouldn't just fly to New York. I suppose it's probably just simpler to do it this way and keep it less in the headlines as well. It is 7:14. Why did he apologize? That story next in sports.
Now, time for a sports update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All Sports Desk. Here's Greg Hill.
The Brewers heading back home after a three-game set in Detroit. The Brewers took two of three against the Tigers. However, the third game ended in a dud. Big fifth inning from the Tigers, notching eight runs in that inning alone. Tigers pitcher Tarik Skubal pitched a gem, 10 strikeouts, 6 2/3 innings of work. Not a bad day for Detroit's pitching. Except when the Brewers did connect, they did send the ball far, but...
And the pitch. High fly ball. Left center field. Wynn pushing it back there. Vierling back at the track at the wall. He leaps up and he brought it back. It happened again.
Again. Can you believe it? That's two home runs robbed in that game alone.
And there's been like five others earlier this season.
Man, it's just sometimes you can't catch a break, which is hard to say when you're first place in the division. But still, still tough to see. Again, the Tigers handed the Brewers 10-2 on Sunday, but they're back at home against the Toronto Blue Jays at American Family Field for a three-game set. Colin Ray will start this evening on the mound for the Brewers. Coverage starts with Brewers warm-up here on WTMJ at 6. First pitch scheduled for 7:10. In the NBA Finals, a.k.a. Drew Holiday versus Jason Kidd. Drew Holiday had the Drew Holiday game. 26 points, only missed three shots all game. 11 rebounds. The Celtics seal a 2-0 series lead on the Mavericks. That series heads to Dallas. That game until Wednesday, game 3.
Ah, good. They need some time.
Yeah, sure, because why not? Let's just stretch this out. 18 days if this series goes to 7 games. That's 2 days longer than the actual Olympics. And Eric, the AmFam Championship was at University Ridge Golf Course in Madison over the weekend. It was Ernie Els and Steve Stricker in a sudden death playoff round. Stricker's four-shot lead was eliminated due to Els' fantastic play on the back nine. So it goes to a playoff, right? Stricker has about a 3 to 4 foot putt to keep the playoff going. And here's how it sounded. Tell me if you think this is good or not. He lipped it out.
No.
Can you imagine, man?
No.
You lipped it out. Sudden death over. Strick fails to go back-to-back in AFAM championships. Tough loss on his home course as well. Yeah. Now, the champion, Ernie Els, you'll love this, was interviewed. And he said once the game was over, the match was over, he went up to Stricker, gave him a hug, and said, "I'm sorry." Because I guess that maybe makes things feel better if you just beat me in a playoff. I don't know, especially in the manner that Strick lost. It was a tough go-around, and here we are. Apologies all around.
He's carrying two big bags of cash.
Yeah,
that he just won in
the started pole vaulting using the flag on the 18th. It was very, very showboy. But he's sorry, so.
Yeah, I guess. Thank you, sir. 7-18 over the weekend. We lost the Marquette University president, Michael Lovell. What's his legacy? That story next. So sad news over the weekend. News broke on Sunday that Marquette University president Michael Lovell had passed away. He had been battling a rare cancer and died while overseas, just 57 years old. Joining us now on the Tri-County Contracting Hotline is Dr. Howard Fuller, retired distinguished professor emeritus at Marquette University and someone who knew Mike Lovell. Dr. Fuller, I wish we were speaking in a happier circumstance, but I figured if there was someone who knew Mike Lovell like you did, we needed to hear from you. As far as his legacy, as far as how he was as a leader, what can you say about Michael Lovell?
Yeah, well, I'm in shock like everyone else is. I mean, I saw Mike. We both got honorary doctorate degrees from Medical College of Wisconsin a couple of weeks ago. And he was talking to me about the trip. And he was explaining that, you know, it was the Board of Trustees and they were going to do this Jesuit formation pilgrimage. And that afterwards, him and Amy, they were going to do some hiking. And so when I got the news yesterday, it was just, you know, devastating because he was really a good person, a good man. He did a lot, not just for Marquette University, but for the city of Milwaukee.
You know, one of the interesting things that I saw in the paper today was that Lovell had told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that when you don't know how much time you have left, you want your days to be impactful and you want to do the things that you love. And I just thought that was so interesting, Dr. Fuller, because here is a guy who clearly had news that wasn't good, had health that was obviously taking its toll. And here he still wanted to work. He still wanted to do things that could change someone else's life.
Yeah, I think the important thing about Mike is he didn't just want to do those things. He was actually doing it. I mean, I know a lot of people know about the SWIM initiative that he and Amy started to deal with wellness and so forth in the city. But he made a real difference at Marquette. And, you know, and he was historic in the sense that I think Mike was the first non-Jesuit priest to be the Marquette University. But the thing I remember about him, and you just hit it, Eric, is that even though we all knew he had this cancer, he was still relentless. You know what I mean? He was on campus. He was all around campus. He was in meetings. He was in meetings in the community. And so, like when I saw him, you know, like I said a couple of weeks ago, I mean, you knew he had this cancer, but you kind of put it out of your head because he was, you know, because he was so active and he was, you know, just continuing to do things in his life. And so even though you knew he had this, it was just a shock yesterday when I got the news.
What are some other things that made him such a great and unique leader?
Yeah, well, one of the things is that Mike was like an engineer. So he had this thought process of an engineer in terms of how it is that you actually get things done. I don't know a lot about what he did, you know, when he was chancellor at UWM, but he had me get on a couple, he had me chair a couple committees. You know, when you retire, you know, they put you to work. And so Mike called me a couple of times to help with some issues that were being faced at Marquette. And the thing about him is he was relentlessly trying to find answers to problems. You know what I mean? He wasn't the kind of person that did a lot of pontificating. You know, he was really, you know, a focused individual and trying to actually come up with things that would make a difference for people.
Dr. Howard Fuller joining us on Wisconsin's Morning News, discussing the life and legacy of Marquette University President Michael Lovell, who passed away on Sunday while overseas in Italy. And you know, one of the other things that I noticed, even in the past 24 hours, Dr. Fuller, is the reaction from young alumni. You know, I work with a lot of Marquette University graduates and just know many just because obviously they're around here. And how they reacted to this and the sadness that they felt, that says something when you can actually impact a 21-year-old's lives in some way, right? I mean, that's usually they got other things on their mind. They ain't thinking about the head of the university.
Yeah, but I think what it shows, though, is that Mike was like a presence in their life, right? I mean, people are not going to really care about you if they don't never get to know you, don't never see you, don't never think you're really doing anything for them. But because of the way that Mike approached his job at Marquette, he was relentlessly, you know, walking on campus, talking to students, you know, all the committees and stuff that you got to deal with when you're the president of the university. But again, I think what you're saying, Eric, is like a reflection of the type of human being that was. And I think that is going to be like his greatest legacy, the kind of thing that you just mentioned, and that all of us who know Mike, we saw that day after day.
It's good to hear your voice, Dr. Howard Fuller. Appreciate your time.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me. I'm sorry it's for this occasion, though.
I agree. Dr. Fuller on Wisconsin's Morning News reacting to the news that Marquette President Mike Lovell has passed away just 57 years old. The Brewers return home to American Family Field. Brewers 360 with Dom Catronio coming up at 7:45.
It's a remarkable story of survival. A man from Georgia spent 4 days in a jungle in Central America after falling hundreds of feet from a cliff. ABC's Andrew Dimbert.
Zane Walyani was hiking on a volcano in Guatemala last month when he says he got separated from his group, then fell 400 feet off a cliff. His cell phone was dead. For 4 nights, he survived on a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and some bananas he had packed. He says he even shared his food with a dog he found.
I feel like the reason I didn't run into any jungle animals was like every time that dog's ears pointed up, I really just was like, I'm going the wrong way.
Wayani's friend reported him missing. After 4 days, Wayani stumbled onto a road where he ran into police.
Wow.
He slept in a tree the first night because he didn't want to run into any bugs. He says he hates bugs and spiders. And obviously, you're in the middle of a Central American jungle. Those things are everywhere.
They'll carry you away. Actually, but, go ahead.
Yeah, that dog that he found, he's trying to bring it home now.
You know what? At first, I scoffed when I said, why are you feeding the dog? You don't know how long you're going to be out there. But if that dog kind of acts as a protector, or at least as warning you of danger.
Right.
It is 7:38. We are giving away tickets. And this is a big show. And we'll explain in 2 minutes. This portion of the show is sponsored to you by Steinhoffels. Visit them at steinhoffels.com. Here we go. Back for the first time in 2 years. The Sun Goes Down 2024 Tour. It's Kenny Chesney returning to AmFam Field. So all day today, WDTMJ is giving away tickets to the show. That includes us right here. Michelle, you can't go. You can go, you just can't have these tickets. So the show is Saturday, June 22nd. So if you're busy Saturday, June 22nd, please. Don't try to get the tickets. We are giving out tickets right now. Be caller number 7. Caller number 7 right now, 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620, and you are going to Kenny Chesney June 22nd at AmFam Field. Good luck and enjoy the show. It is 7:43. Tonight is a big night in Wauwatosa. We've been talking about school districts a lot lately, it seems like, with just the money situation that many have been grappling with. MPS, obviously, is going to be in the news again this week. But Wauwatosa is dealing with declining enrollment projections and, of course, a lesser amount of state aid coming in. And because of that, the superintendent suggested late last week that he is going to propose eliminating the two middle schools in Tosa, and then splitting those grades between the elementary school and the high schools. So basically, Dr. Means' thought is, well, if we're going to get rid of something, let's get rid of the middle schools because I don't want to eliminate elementary. And I don't want to, obviously, you can't really eliminate any high schools. So do you just get rid of the two middle schools and then make it K through 6 at the grade schools and then 7 through 12 at the high schools, essentially. It'll be interesting to see if this works. Now, there's a lot going on here. It's not like the seventh graders would be mingling with seniors or anything like that. They would have separate entrances at the schools or whatnot. But this is something they're going to talk about at a school board meeting tonight. So stay tuned for that. It is 7:44, Brewers 360 in a minute.
Time for an update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All Sports Desk.
Ernie Els wins the AmFam in Madison. The Celtics win Game 2 in the NBA Finals. They're now up 2-0 over the Mavericks. And the Brewers just can't get the sweep done. They fall to the Tigers 10-2. They're back home now taking on the Blue Jays right here on WTMJ. Brewers 360 sponsored by Holiday Automotive. Don Petroni, Brewers Extra Innings host and Brewers extraordinaire and just a downright baseball guru, joins us now on the WTMJ Tri-County Contracting Hotline. Dom, I know it's not that big a deal, and it probably didn't mean anything as far as how the game would have turned out, but how can the Brewers constantly be robbed of home runs? It seems like it's an epidemic for these guys.
It's ridiculous, honestly. It feels like, I mean, if you want to get really deep into the weeds here, Eric, there's a little conspiracy going around baseball right now that the balls are deadened. And, you know, we talk about the juiced baseball in 2019 and how home runs were inflated and everybody was hitting homers.
Yeah.
Now some players feel like they have overcorrected this year and that the ball is dead. And I'm not joking. Like, maybe the Brewers have been continuing to get the bad batch. But, yes, this seems like an anomaly of how much they've been robbed. It happened again yesterday with Riley Green.
It just keeps happening. It's unbelievable. All right, so the Blue Jays come into town. Anything to pay attention to as far as the Blue Jays go? Are they still as good a team as they used to be?
They're okay. They should be better. Their bullpen is sort of shaky. Their superstars, a few years ago, everyone was talking about all the former big league sons that they have on that team, right? So you've got Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You've got Bo Bichette, who's the son of Dante Bichette. And they had Kevin Biggio, who's the son of Hall of Famer Craig Biggio. Well, Kevin was just DFA'd. He's no longer with the team. Their offense has been a little bit underwhelming. And in fact, Vlad Guerrero Jr. has been floated in trade rumors, even floated in trade rumors to the Chicago Cubs. So here's somebody that has some power and can do a lot with the bat. Can't really do much else. But the Brewers, certainly a team that should be able to compete with the Blue Jays. But don't be fooled by their record. They're playing in the hardest division in baseball.
Dom Catronio joining us for Brewers 360. Hey, something happened over the weekend, and I absolutely love this. So there's a London series taking place. So the Phillies playing the Mets in London. And I got to tell you, this guy is growing on me all the time. I'm such a fan of Bryce Harper of the Phillies. And what he did over the weekend, for those who saw it, he used a bat that was painted like the Philly Fanatic, wearing like a special top hat.
Like wearing the Royal Guard.
Yes, Royal Guard top hat. And then he hit a bomb. He hit a home run. And then he slid and did like a soccer celebration as if he was, you know, scoring a goal like they would do in football. I love the fact that he is becoming a showman and a performer than just a baseball player. It's like we're changing tides here a little bit more.
I think that feels great because when baseball stars are acting like superstars and also performing like a dude, Bryce is having a great season. It really just helps the sport grow, right? I mean, think about 18 and 19 for Yelich and the Yelly Belly years when Yelly wins it in 18 and then Belly wins it in 19 and all the marketing they did around that. That was fun too, right? And I think the Brewers, you know, you look at this team and there are some guys like Yelly and maybe some guys down the road like an electric talent like Churio or a smiling personality like Garrett Mitchell that could fit that bill one day. But Harper has really grown into this. I mean, remember, we've known about Bryce Harper since he was 15 years old.
Right.
He's only just turning 30, which is wild to think about.
Just good stuff. I love that. Making it a show, making it fun. Dom Catronio joining us for Brewers 360. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Eric.
7:49.
Ready, hut, hut.
Idea Man.
I was out playing with the tournament director, Nate Pokrass. And we ran into Strick, and Strick asked that same question.
Innovator.
You know, he said, how was it? And both of us were like, it's way too, it's a tough course. There's water, and, you know, for us 15 handicap. Plus, it's a tough course.
And Packers Hall of Famer.
And Steve Deadpan looked at us and was like, well, I made 9 birdies.
Well, yeah, you did. Steve, bro.
No blank, you did. You designed the course and you're a professional golfer.
It's time for Tausch on Wisconsin's Morning News. Presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin and Kohler Services.
7:53, Mark Tauscher joining us on Wisconsin's Morning News. So, Tausch, Greg picked up on this one. So, game one of the NBA Finals was last Thursday. Game two was last night. The Celtics lead that series 2-0 over the Mavericks. If this series were to go 7 games, there'd be an 18-day stretch between game one and game 7. 18 days, which, as Greg observed, is longer than the Olympics. Why in the world do they stretch these series out so far?
So, Eric, we've been doing this 750 hit for, I don't know, a year and a half. And every time someone asks a question about why something is being done, especially in the world of sports, what is usually the answer that comes up?
Money, 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 money.
Money, 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 money. And you didn't even put in the fact that for the Boston Celtics, I think they had 9 days after they closed out the Indiana Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals. They had another 9 days. So you're looking at 27 days, which is almost a month. And they're going to end up playing 7 games. Now, I don't think it's going to go 7, but I don't, you know, there's obviously some method or thought process as far as, well, we have to plan Thursdays because that draws the biggest crowd. Then Sundays, at this point, it should be every other day. I am totally on board with you. It drags it out, but I think you want to have your league being talked about. You want to stay in that spotlight as long as you can. So while it's all, the answer is always going to be money as far as why sports teams do what they do, I also think there's, especially with the NBA, it's about trying to keep on top of mind for sports fans, because this is usually a slower time of the year. And when you have your biggest, you know, your championship, your biggest spectacle, you want to drag it out as long as you can. So I think it ends up helping the league and the way fans, I think most fans are like you thinking, get it over with. You know, same thing with hockey. You keep dragging it out. And at some point it's like, and especially if the games haven't been as compelling, which unfortunately for the NBA, the finals have not been yet.
Boy, that, I guess I should have known the money situation on it. I guess I never thought of the idea of, okay, dead part of the year. It's summer, kids are off or whatnot. Let's make sure that we can stretch this as much as we can just to keep here in the NBA moniker.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too, and what the NFL has done geniusly, is find a way to have some event or something every month so that you don't, it used to be the NFL was 9 months. And NFL Live would be on ESPN 9 months. And then they, well, 9 months is good, but we could do a year. And you start kind of figuring things out. So the NBA, they've now added the summer games where they're out in Las Vegas and they get the young players and they have the draft. And that, so you're always looking to do that. And there's nothing better from their programming standpoint than to say, all right, let's, you know, make it 18 days, which for 7 games is insane, especially when there's nothing else going on. It should be every other day, and then put a travel day in there when you're on the road, but that's not the road they're going down.
Is there a benefit to the athletes, like, to have that much rest time, or does that hurt them?
I think there's always a benefit to getting rest, and that's, you know, usually whenever you ask a question like, why are they doing something, player safety and, you know, player well-being isn't at play. So I think most, like, you look at what Kristaps Porzingis, who has the same injury as what Giannis did, you want to give them some time to recover. So actually, in the one rare case where you could actually look at it and say, a league is looking out for its players, they're looking out for how can we help them be the most productive, because there's no doubt having a couple of days instead of, you know, flying out and playing the next day, it puts more strain on an NBA player's body, an NFL player's body. So that part of it, and I hadn't even thought of that. Maybe we shouldn't be looking at it and saying, why is there so many days off in between? We should say, thank you, from a player standpoint,
yes,
saying, that's awesome that you're actually giving us this, because Most times it's not that way. It's like, all right, this is when you're going to play because that's what we need you to do. And in this case, the NBA is actually looking and saying, all right, guys, we're going to give you 3 or 4 days. Not really for that reason. The reason is that's what the TV networks want, what time they want to be playing.
You know, these finals could only be 4 games, so who knows? Maybe they'll try to stretch it out even more next year.
That whole Olympics thing, that is something. When you said that, that kind of blew my mind.
Isn't that amazing?
The Olympics, that is a crazy stat that I had not thought of.
Talish, thank you, pal. Talk to you tomorrow.
You bet, guys.
Mark Talish on Wisconsin's Morning News, sponsored by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.